Hi, I'm Chris Difford. Welcome to I Never Thought It Would Happen, a podcast for the wonderful charity Help Musicians. Joining me is a man who formed the first band with a bunch of friends when he was 14, an ambitious band of brothers, who jammed in a drafty old wooden rehearsal space with posters of Jimi Hendrix and Led Zeppelin on the wall. Fast forward 15 years and that band, Blackstone Cherry, were headlining the Royal Albert Hall. But as with all rock and roll stories, along with the highs, there are plenty of lows. Especially for the singer and guitarist, who is Chris Robertson. And by the way, I'll be right back at the end to let you know just how you can get your hands on one of Chris's guitars. Hey Chris, welcome to this podcast for Help Musicians. I never thought it would happen. Where are you?
Man, I am currently home in Kentucky. We're actually finalizing the new record. So we're finishing up the record. I've been singing some this morning already. Finished up one song. Have a nice chat with you. Then we'll get back in there. And John Fred's, we're recording in John Fred's house the vocals for the record. So it's kind of nice. I only have to go about 15 minutes down the road to my buddy's house,
that's perfect.
So it's a great environment to be recording vocals.
Oh, that's cool. Has it always been as easy as that for you?
You know, we've recorded every record we've ever done with the exception of three records at home here in Kentucky. We did our second record, Magic Mountain, in Nashville, which still wasn't that bad. It's an hour and a half from home, you know. And then we did two records out in California, but you know, this will be, we've been very fortunate to have some nice recording studios and producers and engineers and stuff like that around home. And we've finally got a team assembled now where we've got the people that, you know, we use. And we rented out a really cool venue here called the Plaza Theater. That's about a 1,200 seat theater. And we recorded the drum tracks in there. And it sounds amazing, man. It's like, you know, the nicest reverb you're ever going to get is a big open room like that. So,
yeah. So you feel safe anyway.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a safeness to it, but there's also that little bit of mystery because we've never recorded the drums in this environment before or used some of the gear we're using. So, you know, it's scary, but it's, you know, you're kind of in your element, but you're adding elements that kind of take you out of the element, if that makes any sense whatsoever.
Yeah, I understand. I remember reading that John Bonham used to love recording his tracks in the hallway rather than in the actual room just to get the vibe, the sound.
Yeah, that was our thing. You know, Zeppelin recorded in castles and stairwells and everything. And well, in South Central Kentucky, we don't have a castle close by. So we figured the Plaza Theater would be a close second.
Yeah, absolutely. What is the writing process for you as a band? Is there any one particular person who writes the words, one particular writes the melody particularly, or?
No, man, we kind of
chip in.
We kind of just do our thing. We all chip in. We all do our thing. We write a lot on the road, on the back of the bus, actually. That's where we get the majority of ideas because, you know, we'll go to sound check or we'll be, you know, or we'll go into a jam at some point and there'll be a riff that sticks out, you know, and we'll just kind of hold on to those pieces, and then we go back to the bus. And I've always got a computer with Pro Tools set up and everything, you know. So we get to rocking and rolling and seeing how it's going.
That's cool. So when you wake up in the morning, you're Chris. You look in the mirror and you become the guy in the band and you've become dad. So that's your life. That's your kind of, that's what you were born to do. Have you always found it really easy to sort of be that guy?
You know, for me, even when we're on stage, I'm just Chris, you know, I'm just an exaggeration of myself. And just because you want to, because to me, if it's not genuine, if you're not being who you truly are, just in the best form you can possibly give to people every night, you know, they're going to see through it and see that it's not genuine. You know, I could go put on a facade every night and be a totally different person on stage than I am off, but I prefer to just be me, man, you know. And there was a great Kurt Cobain quote that stuck with me. And I don't know if he originated the quote, but I remember seeing him say it, is that he would rather be hated for who he was than loved for who he's not. And that stuck with me when I was a kid, started playing guitar. And, you know, you got to do what moves you, especially in this business, because if you're doing it to move someone else, then they're probably not going to move at all. You know, it's got to come from within and be a feeling and be a part of who you truly are, you know? So for me, it's that culmination of the family. And to be quite honest, I don't know that I could have done this as my profession and as my life choice before technology got to what it is now, where we can do things like this, you know, have a face-to-face, you know, phone call, essentially. Those little things like that are massive to me on the road. Like, my phone is my peace when I'm on the road. That's what keeps me centered, you know. It's being able to know that I can check in with my family at any given point. When I have that, it makes it much, much easier to be on the road. You know, I remember touring in Europe in early 2007 or so, you know, right before iPhones were a big thing, and you know, SIMs didn't work worldwide like they do now. You know, your SIM card when you left the USA didn't work when you got to Germany.
No.
And I remember doing a month over there where I didn't have a phone, and it was amazing during the shows. But the time not spent during the shows or talking to fans or doing interviews or whatever, it was just like I was trying to figure out how to contact home and do that. And I said from then on, I would never do it again without a phone that worked everywhere I went. If I had to get a satellite phone, I didn't care, you know. But thankfully, the next trip, I had an iPhone, and we've been rocking ever since. You know, I had that world SIM card.
I remember playing Jamaica many, many years ago, and you had to book a phone call and go down the next morning. So it is great that everybody's connected now. Do you have a spiritual connection?
I do, man. You know, I'm a believer in a big man upstairs. You know, I've never been a religious person. I'm not.
No.
It's never been a thing to me, but I do have a big, strong faith in spirituality and that there's something bigger than me out there, you know, something bigger than all of us. You know, that's my opinion. You know, it doesn't have to be everybody's opinion. Nobody has to agree with me. That's the beauty of spirituality, is we find our own and we discover it, and we discover what makes us, you know, feel alive and connected to things.
Mm. Yeah, that sounds good. That sounds really good. That's good. That brings balance.
Yeah, man. I mean, I think that's what life's really about, right? You know, is even too much of a great thing makes you not appreciate it. You know, it's that balance of the light and dark, the yin and yang. You know, as cliche as it is, it's the truth. Balance is the most important thing in anything you do with life, in my opinion, you know?
Yeah. As a fellow musician, I know that sometimes you have to go to the dark places to see the light. And I know from my own experience, I've spent too much time lingering in the darkness, but the light eventually came. I wonder if you've ever felt that kind of feeling.
Oh, dude, I went through a complete kind of nervous breakdown when I was about 27 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up, the day our third record came out, I spent the entire morning having my first visit with a psychiatrist to go try to get a grasp on why I felt the way I did and everything was. And what it came down to was my entire whole ecosystem was out of balance. You know, at the end of the day, you know, I got on the medications that helped me get to a better place. I still every day, man, I take antidepressant. I'm manic depressive. That's my, you know, clinical kind of term for what I deal with, is manic depression and high anxiety, you know. And so it's either really good or it's total shite, one of the two, right? So but it is what it is.
It is.
You know, and I've learned my ways over the last, you know, 10 going on 11 years now to deal with those things and to try to find some kind of positivity. And, you know, for me, the greatest light in all of that is when I sit down with a guitar or any kind of musical equipment and start to let, you know, that darkness come out and turn it into a light. You know, that's...
Mm.
Especially on our newest record, you know, it's, I lost my dad while we were writing the record. The band changed. There was a lot of things that would never be the same again, you know, and I had to learn how to, you know, kind of figure that out. Even at 36 years old, it was a learning process to learn how to deal with that much big change at one time, you know.
Mm.
We announced that the band was changing, you know, a member, and then it wasn't 2 months later, my dad passed away, you know, after his battle with cancer. So it was a massive change of a summer. And I really, you know, I think a lot of the music on this new record reflects deep personal change and, you know, coming through that to try to be a better version of yourself, even than you were before those changes. Because, you know, for me, I look at it as my dad was always kind of my rock, my guardian, you know, the protector of the family. You know, I could always go to him. And now I'm the oldest living male in my family. And I'm the guy my son has to go to now, you know, just like my dad had to do for me. Yeah, my son's 10 now, and he's growing up, and he's, you know, learning a lot more and asking more serious questions and stuff, you know. And it's like, I got to be better than I even was before, you know. And that's my mindset, you know, at least for trying to better myself, not only for me, but for my family and for the band and the people around me. I want to be better, man, in all aspects of everything, you know. It's just when you lose somebody that you're that close to, you know, you reevaluate everything sometimes, and that's what I did, you know. And I want to be a better version of me for everything.
Yeah. And do you think your son is going to want to be a musician too when he looks up to his dad?
You know, he loves music. He loves our band. You know, he's a big Michael Jackson fan. You know, he likes Oliver Tree, Michael Jackson, Blackstone Cherry, and he's a big Metallica fan too. You know, he got into Metallica back even before the Stranger Things hype, you know, kind of took it off. You know, but he's been brought up around great music, you know, in my opinion, and at least stuff that I think is great. And I got him a couple guitars, you know, some smaller 3/4 scale, He could give a rat's ass about guitar, but he loves drums and a piano. So,
of course.
So, you know, I had a drum kit at the house that I used to record some stuff. So he kind of inherited that. And then we got him a piano for Christmas. So he's all in, but it's just, he's not a guitar player, which is fine by me. You know, that's totally fine.
He'll change.
You know,
He'll change.
And even if he didn't play music, that would be fine with me, man, you know, because he shows an interest at it at 8, 9, 10 years old. And I didn't even think about playing guitar till I was 13, you know. So no. I told him, I'm like, man, you've already got a big jump start on the old man. If you decide to go after this, you've already got a head start on what I did, you know. So you never know what you could do. I've been very fortunate, and, you know, we've worked extremely hard.
Was your dad in music at all?
Yeah, man. My dad was the reason I wanted to play guitar. I wanted to be like him. You know, he played locally. He was a local musician here around home and, you know, well-regarded as one of the best guitar players around here for a long, long time. Daddy passed away the last day of June, and I took him to his last band practice, I think, the second week of June.
No.
So he kept playing all through it, you know, and when he found out he was sick, it was already very far gone. He found out that he had stage 4 cancer that had already spread, you know. And even after he found out that it had gone to his brain, he still kept playing his guitar and up until the very end, you know. So that's something that I hang on to, and that, you know, I've still got the last guitar he played. Mm-hmm. We did a live album at the Albert Hall, and I did a song that we had written called Things My Father Said that we actually played at my dad's funeral. And I did it, you know, kind of solo just by myself with one of my dad's guitars. So there's a cool video of it, you know, and the crowd really helped me out.
Oh, God, I got to see
man,
that.
It was just...
I've got to see that.
It was a beautiful moment, man. The crowd, you know, really lit the place up and sang along really loud for my daddy. So you know, I know he was there with us watching over us. Me and him talked about that show. Well, we talked about that show for so long, man. You know, how proud he was that I was getting to go there and, you know, stand on that stage where Hendrix and Zeppelin and Jeff Beck and all these amazing, I've got chills on my arms right now just talking about the fact that I got to stand there, you know?
Yeah.
It's just those dudes, you know, it's all those guys that redefined everything that the guitar was, you know? They were on that stage at some point and they played their hearts out. And all you can do in a room like that is go out there and try your best not to cry while you're playing everything, you know? Mm.
My name is Mike, and I play in a band called Caroline, and myself and the band as well are based in Southeast London, and I play guitar mostly in that band and also co-write and arrange the music. I would describe our music as explorative and in some senses experimental. I definitely remember a time when my interest in music was casual. I've been playing guitar maybe since I was like I think I was 10 or 11. Definitely kind of liked music, but I think I actually remember the first time my mind was kind of blown by hearing something, and it was when we were watching maybe the Brit Awards or some award show, and Eminem's The Real Slim Shady came on. It just was so affecting for some reason. I thought it was just amazing. I would just play it again and again and again and again, this one clip of The Real Slim Shady by Eminem. And then I became really obsessed with rap and hip hop and gangster rap. But I also was really starting to get into playing the guitar. Yeah, I just kind of played guitar obsessively from when I first picked it up and got really into like things that you might get into if you're trying to like expand your guitar playing. So like I got really into progressive rock and stuff like that in my like mid-teens. It's just that I'm kind of obsessed with listening to or playing music. So it's such a kind of fundamental part of my identity. And even if I start to find things really hard, I can't imagine just forcing a kind of diversion of the thing I feel kind of driven to do. Yeah, it can be very hard. I mean, it's not something I make a living from. I have in the past playing in other people's bands, but not from my own music at this point in time. I mean, it's a kind of weird economy because when I've played in other people's bands, it's like as a session player, and I sort of know that like a large portion of that, the money for each show, for example, is going towards paying session players, and kind of like band themselves maybe aren't even taking any money. It's a kind of strange economy like that. Friends playing in each other's bands. Sometimes I do feel very stressed by it. I do like lots of different jobs at the moment to kind of make a living. But for me, the most important thing is just being able to find flexible work. I've always managed to find that in London, although maybe I've just been lucky, I don't know. And I've somehow always managed to like find somewhere relatively affordable to live. But if I hadn't been lucky like that, I actually don't know how I would do it, because it's just, everything's so expensive. It's really hard. The industry is very different, I suppose, to the industry that I imagined it was when I was like 12 years old. And then I think about the music that I work on with people, and I feel really happy about it because I feel like I've kind of pushed the boundaries of what I thought of as music when I first discovered music. So in terms of like expectations of what you might have fantasized about that being like, if you were a kid and were interested in being a musician, there are kind of positives and negatives. There are resources out there, obviously. I mean, I know that Help Musicians has kind of support lines for these things, although I haven't utilized them myself, although I haven't really felt in a position where I thought about that. But in a really specific case, we had a US tour booked, and we had a kind of preliminary budget at some point. Basically, it was going to be a lot more expensive than we hoped, and we weren't sure how we were going to do it, and we managed to secure funding from our musicians to go towards the cost of the tour. And I don't know, it's strange to travel very far and people come to see you and they like your songs, or they've been looking forward to seeing you play for a while or something. Yeah, it felt like a kind of pinnacle moment. And also, we were offered to record a video for NPR, a tiny desk session, these videos they do from their offices. And it felt really important to be able to follow through with that, because those videos are quite popular. And yeah, I mean, it's an honor to be asked. I love loads of those videos. There are some that I've watched so many times. And I kind of assumed, and this probably has been the case, like it would give people an opportunity to listen to us that maybe wouldn't have found our band under other circumstances. We have a manager who's a very good friend of ours. I mean, we have partners and family. We have a very good relationship with our label, who are really lovely people, and bandmates also. It's kind of the most integral thing that I don't even think about it. We're all very supportive of each other, and we're really good at talking about things and just being kind to each other and lifting each other up as musicians. I probably take that a bit for granted even. I want to say like, make sure that you're kind of finding pleasure in what you're doing, although I feel like that's a bit naive to think that that's always possible, because sometimes you do have to or sometimes it feels like after you've done something kind of grueling that it is rewarding. But yeah, I don't know, just be kind to oneself. I think
Music Minds Matter from Help Musicians is available 24/7 to anyone who works in music. Call us for free to speak to an accredited counsellor who can offer you emotional support, advice and information. It doesn't have to be a crisis or even about music. If you work in music and are struggling to cope, then Music Minds Matter is here for you. Simply call 0808 802 8008 or visit musicmindsmatter.org.uk to receive support today.
So how is the chemistry of the band after all these years of being together?
It's amazing. You know, we got Steve in with us a couple years ago and he just kind of fell right in. And that's something you always think about, you know, when there is a change, you know, when we've been going as long as we have. But when you find somebody that is like-minded, that comes from the same, you know, kind of well water that you came from, it makes it really easy. And, you know, not only is Steve a superior musician, but he's also just an incredible human being as well. So, you know, the chemistry right now, I think it's as strong as it's ever been, you know, because we're still here. You know, we're still here after all these years, still making new music and still having a great time doing it. And I feel like, you know, we're making some of the best music we ever made right now.
What sort of venues do you play here?
So when we come over, we like to do the arenas and we like to do, you know, the theaters as well. Like, you know, we'll do Wembley in London, you know, but the last tour we did where we came over, we did the Royal Albert Hall in London, which was mind blowing for me. You know, I've watched videos of all of my heroes, you know, play that venue, you know, and it was a really special show. But I mean, the Manchester Apollo is another great theater that I absolutely adore playing concerts. And I love that venue.
I do too, yeah.
And I've seen concerts there, you know. We were over there and we went and saw Skynyrd there, and it was like everywhere in that venue is a great view and it sounded great. You know, I really like that venue.
So is it touring that keeps you happy?
I think it's a combination of touring, home life, and being in the studio, you know. I mean, admittedly, I'm a homebody. I love being at home. I've been with my wife now since we were 16 years old. You know, our son is 10 years old now, so obviously that's great to be at home. But for me, it's that delicate balance of touring, being on the road, playing the shows, being at home and being dad and a husband and taking care of those things. And then also the creating side of it. You know, there's a lot of guys that prefer studio or they prefer live. For me, it's that blend of both, because creating the sonic, you know, spectrum, the digital painting that you're trying to create with sonics, to me, is one of the most amazing experiences, part of the whole process, you know, the writing and recording of a song. But then there's that magic of delivering that to an audience and getting that handed back to you. It's amazing, you know. We've worked extremely hard, but as you know, in this business, you have to be fortunate as well.
You do.
And land in the right spots at the right times and play the right gigs and do the things, you know. But we've been very fortunate to be able to make a career out of music. And, you know, it got really scary a couple of years ago when all that went away and, you know, nobody was making money off of touring anymore, you know, and we couldn't do anything. And, you know, we're just thankful that it's back and thankful that we're back in the studio making new music to come tour again, you know.
So apart from your dad as being obviously a huge inspiration, what other guitarists were around you in Kentucky that you looked up to or in America?
Man, you know, a lot of local guys, really. You know, the Kentucky Headhunters, that's John Fred, our drummer's dad's band. They came out in 89 when we were, you know, just starting school. And they broke the record. At the time, it was the fastest gold and platinum selling record in country music that had ever happened. And Greg, the guitar player in the band, you know, they were a country band by label, but they're a rock and roll band by heart. You know, they were a little edgier, you know, and they plugged Les Pauls into Marshalls and just cranked them to 10, you know, and it's what it was. But Greg and Richard are great guitar players. There was a band called Superfuzz, and Dave Angstrom was a singer and guitar player in that band. And I can say he probably had as big an influence, you know, as anybody in the, you know, in that era of music, you know, that more modern rock stuff. But You know, really, man, it was the stuff my dad turned me on to, which was, you know, Skynyrd and AC/DC and Ted Nugent. And he was aligned to that. You know, he really liked Judas Priest. For him, the more British rock was more Priest and Maiden, you know, the metal stuff and Ozzy. You know, basically, he loved Birmingham. You know, but no, man, my dad really liked Priest and stuff like that. And then John Fred's dad, when we started the band, he turned us on to more English rock, you know, like bands like Trapeze and you know, get us listening to Free and stuff like that, you know, the pre-Bad Company stuff. I heard Bad Company through my dad because they would play Bad Company songs at, you know, yeah, dance halls or stuff as part of the Southern rock kind of stuff. It's funny how Bad Company fits in there. Obviously, you know, the Hendrix stuff, you know, but a lot of the big guys from E-Man were Skynyrd, you know, all three of the guys in Skynyrd. Ed King's great, you know, but I was a bigger fan of Steve Gaines' guitar playing in that lineup. But then, you know, I got turned on to Free and some more obscure stuff through Richard. And then I remember Joffred's uncle, who's a drummer in the Headhunters. I played something. He's like, Chris, you ever listen to Jeff Beck? And I was like, no. He's like, you need to. And I went, and sure enough, at the dollar store, there was like a $5 compilation of Jeff Beck's first two records. And I picked it up, and it blew me away. And then, you know, I mean, it's just hard not to talk about Jeff Beck this close, you know, to his passing.
I know. It's really hard.
Yeah. And you know, I was actually tracking a guitar. It's so ironic, man. I was tracking a guitar solo on a song that had this kind of inspired by Jeff Beck kind of vibe, where I was, because I don't use a whammy bar that much, but I was doing a little bit of stuff, you know, and tracking it. And they were like, man, that's got the Jeff Beck vibes. And no sooner than I finished that, we were listening back to it, our group chat with all our band and crew on it came through that Jeff Beck had passed. And we were like, it's just so ironic, man. You know, I got to meet Jeff one time.
Oh, yeah.
We were at the Classic Rock Awards, and we had won the award for Best New Band. Mm-hmm. And Jeff was there, Tony Iommi. I mean, it was just literally the who's who of heavy metal and rock and roll, you know. Mm-hmm. Jimmy Page, Tony Iommi, Jeff Beck, Steven Tyler. You know, it's just like literally all these dudes. And I see Jeff Beck standing there, and I don't know how I had the courage to do it, but I just walked up. You know, he was not really talking to anybody. I walked up, and I said, Mr. Beck, I just want to introduce myself. Say I'm a huge fan. You know, my name's Chris Robertson, but I'm Blackstone Cherry. We did a version of Shapes and Things. And he looks at me and he goes, I love your version. You guys did a great arrangement. The guitar work was great, too. Kiss my hand. I kissed his hand back, and I'm just like, this did not just happen. Like, Jeff Beck was truly, I've been very, very blessed. I've been very fortunate to meet some of the greatest guitar players to ever walk the face of the earth. And I can honestly say that without a doubt, Jeff Beck was one of the most humble and sincere,
yeah,
genuine people that I ever had the pleasure to shake a hand with. You know, he's a dude, man. He was a dude gentleman, like the rest of us, that just, but he was a genius. He is one of, I don't know, man, a handful or less of guitar players that, in my opinion, you can't mimic them. You can't. You just can't. I'm sorry. You know, you just can't sound like them. You can get really close to sounding like guys like Jimmy Page or even Hendrix, or with the right kind of thing, there's guys that do a great job of sounding like Eddie Van Halen. But I've never heard anybody sound like Jeff Beck. And it's just like...
True. That's true.
You know, it's such a shame and such an unfortunate, you know, thing for him, you know, the bacterial infection, you know, but that guy, the groundwork he laid and then took into the stratosphere will live on, you know, throughout As long as guitar players exist, Jeff Beck's name will be right there with the guitar.
So who do you lean on the most when you go home and you've got something on your mind? Is it your therapist, your wife, yourself? Who do you speak to?
For me now, man, it's the band dudes or my wife, you know, I'm very fortunate in the fact that my wife is my best friend. You know, we met in high school and the high school sweethearts, you know, and it just kind of never fell out of love with each other. Here we are still, you know, and then I wouldn't trade anybody in the band or in our crew for anything. I talk to those guys on a regular basis when something's bothering me, you know, I mean, the unsung heroes of the music business are the techs that work with bands.
Yeah.
Because they're not just making sure that the show goes on properly. They're also your therapists. They're your best friend. They're your you know, your drinking buddy when you need one. You know, they're the guy that tells you you don't need a drink when you don't need one. You know, there's so much more than a guy performing a task.
It's a family in a way, isn't it, I suppose?
It really is for us, and that's the way we've always ran our crew. You know, all our crew live within an hour of us, and if they didn't, they moved within an hour of us, and it's just, Blackstone Cherry is a family business, man. It's just what it is.
Yeah. I love that family feeling when you're in a band, and it's always good to have someone to talk to. In this country, we have a charity called Help Musicians, and you can pick up a phone and speak to a therapist, or you can get help if you haven't got any money to record a demo. You can go to songwriting events. They'll give you help with promotion. Is there anything like that in America?
Man, I'm not sure. I know there were some things, but admittedly, man, I don't have cable TV at home just because most of the stuff on there is negative. You know, it's the news is so negative. I actually canceled our cable TV and everything in 2020 when the news was just awful every day. Mm. So I'm kind of out of touch with reality on a lot of stuff. You know, to be honest, we kind of have our little corner, you know, where we live and we're out there. And, you know, I'm kind of one of those people that I'm not sure if something like that exists, but if it does, I'm grateful for it, you know. And I wanted to ask, Chris, do you guys take any kind of donations for auction or anything like that for the Help Music Charity?
I believe so.
Or have you ever done anything?
Yeah, we have. I think the people who sit in the office and do that kind of thing probably do. I run songwriting workshops for people that are looking for peace of mind and a space to write.
Yeah.
And it's really amazing. I run two workshops a year. One of them is for people from Nashville and Austin, like, you know, pucker songwriters. And then the other one is for the kids who can't afford that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, man, if it would help you guys out, I would love to donate a guitar and sign it for you guys to do whatever you need with. And maybe you can raise some money to help with more trips or something. You know, we'll get a photo and get you a signed guitar and you guys can help some more musicians with it.
That'd be amazing. And, you know, you've been out on the road with so many different bands. Do you like the support slot? I certainly do. We went out with Hall & Oates last year. We were done by 9 o'clock. It was fantastic.
Dude, I love it. We're closing every night on this tour, but trust me, man, like those few tours we get where we go out and we're the support band and we play 45-minute set or an hour set, and you're done by 9:30, you're like, man, this is all right, like, you know? So it's, you know, don't get me wrong, same as you, I'm sure. I love doing my own full show, you know, doing all of our full songs and everything. But there's something about, and the other thing is it takes me back to when we were first starting out, when you're going out and you're not the main band, and it kind of almost makes you feel like you got a point to prove to the people.
Yeah,
you know?
You got to shine your shoes.
That, you know, I deserve to be here. Yeah, man, you got to let them know you deserve to be there too when you're not the main act. I love playing music, man. I don't care if it's, you know, I used to go play music with my dad at the small little dive bars around here, you know, and we'd have, you know, 50, 60 people show up and we'd have the biggest time, just like we were playing, you know, Download Festival or something. But, you know, man, it's just music is a beautiful, beautiful thing that takes us to many, many places. I saw one of the best quotes. It might be the quote of 2023, in my opinion, from a dear friend of mine, Miss Lizzie Hale from the band Hailstorm. She said, music is the closest thing to magic.
That's cool.
And damn if that ain't the nail on the head, in my opinion, because it's the one true universal language of the entire world. And it's the one thing that can take you anywhere you want to go if you're in the right headspace.
Absolutely. I don't want to keep you from your singing because you've got to get back in there, but you've been very generous with your time and your heart.
Thank you, guys.
And, you know, I know you've had tough times, and it seems to me that your smile and your face is pulling you through, and it's lovely you've got a son to look up to you. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing.
Yes, sir.
And I wish you well out on the road.
Thank you so much, sir. Thank you all for taking the time to speak to us. You know, it's been an amazing journey so far, and we can't wait to see how it continues. And we mentioned the band and my son and my wife and everybody with the support system, but I have to be completely honest too, man. The fans of our band have been so supportive of me through all of my struggles, you know, and so understanding. I love each and every one of you. God bless you all. You know, I hope you have an amazing 2023.
Yeah, cool. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Absolute pleasure speaking to you.
Pleasure to speak to you. And I'll see you soon.
Yes, sir. We'll see you in London, man. We'll hook you up with a guitar and hopefully brace money or something. I'll get the whole band to sign.
Cool. Thank you. See you soon. Bye now, Chris.
You guys have a good one.
Bye. Bye. What a nice bloke. And it really sounds like Chris has formed the right balance in his life. He's a family man. He's a member of a band. And you know what? You've got to watch the video performance of Things My Father Said from the Royal Albert Hall. It really is a tearjerker. It will make the hairs stand up on the back of your neck. Chris mentioned gifting a guitar to help musicians at the end of our conversation, and you'll be happy to know that he did just that. And you can bid until 5 p.m. on the 18th of July, 2023. It's a Fender Telecaster, vintage blonde, and it's been signed by every member of Blackstone Cherry. On the auction page, you'll even find a picture of Chris himself playing it in Nottingham back in 2021. For more information about how to make a bid, please head to Help Musicians' website. That's www.helpmusicians.org.uk/Blackstone Cherry. And there you will find all the details you will need to place your bid. So best of luck with the bidding. As always, thank you for listening and please subscribe to this podcast. Supporting Help Musicians in any way at all helps the musicians who bring so much to our lives. To find out more about Help Musicians, you can find them on all social media channels. Keep coming back. I Never Thought It Would Happen is a Give Me Sugar production for Help Musicians.